First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the show. We have a double dip of the BS Report today. We have podcasts coming Tuesday and Wednesday. Today we have Cousin Sal, a diehard Cowboys fan who's been in mourning the last 2 days. Sal, are you alive?
I am barely alive, Bill. Yeah, I am. It's been a rough couple days here.
You've been a recluse.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not lying. I spoke to my buddy Darren briefly about it, but other than that, I haven't talked to one person about football. I haven't watched any highlights. The only thing I did is I looked through online at the play-by-play charts 4 and 5 times to see how we lost that game, because I can't really figure it out. I still can't figure it out. I mean, it's...
Well, I can give you one reason.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you bought that plane ticket, which we talked about last week. Yeah. Now, this is the second time. What was the first time?
The first time was when the Mets were up against the Cardinals, and I thought for sure we were going to the World Series to play the Tigers. Here's the thing. If I don't buy the plane ticket a week in advance, it ends up being 3 times the cost. And I did check. That's one thing I checked that night. Instead of $300, it would have been $950 to fly to Dallas had I not booked in advance and jinxed it. But
right.
It is a jinx, so.
Now, do you feel like you jinxed it, or do you think it was just an unfortunate coincidence?
I think it was an unfortunate coincidence. I think okay. 8 drop passes, I think almost 100 yards in penalties, had a lot to do with it. On the other hand, I don't understand. Like, the Giants had 57 yards in the second half. It was tied at halftime, and they had 57 total yards in the second half,
right.
And they won the game. They had 2 3 and outs, or 2 drives in the fourth quarter with 3 and outs. And they
right.
won the freaking game, and it gets me sick.
Well, maybe there's something to this whole thing where you go into the season playing well, and maybe you keep playing well. I don't ever remember it being banged home as clearly as this season. The teams
about resting starters and stuff, you mean?
The teams that, even a team like the Cowboys that had pretty much everything clinched after the Packers, the NFL Network game,
mm-hmm.
They didn't finish December very strong. You got Terrell got hurt, or Terrell, as Chris Collinsworth calls him. But you certainly weren't playing that well. Meanwhile, the Giants had this improbable turnaround after Week 17.
Yeah.
The Bucks limped into the playoffs. The Colts, they certainly didn't really go in with a head of steam. Maybe there's something to this whole thing.
San Diego played their starters. The Packers played their starters. I agree. I think that this is the one year that you open your eyes to it. But, I mean, we've done it both ways. Last year we played well down the stretch but didn't win the division, so we weren't expected. And then we get the shiny ball snapped to Romo, and he can't handle it. So we could lose all different ways. We could be good. We could sneak in. And it's just – I don't know. I'm depressed mostly because I'm depressed. I mean, it should get easier, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, as you have more responsibilities, you have a wife, you have kids on the way. This should matter less, and it matters more, and it makes me sick that I'm so immature or whatever to not be able to handle it, that I can't talk to someone until you for like 3 days. But.
Well, you've had three devastating losses in the past 15 months, because you had the 2 Cowboys losses, and you had the Mets-Cardinals game in October 2006.
Yeah. Yep. And then the Mets terrible collapse down the stretch.
Right, and then the Mets collapse this year. I forgot about that. Yeah, so you've been taking some hits. But I will say the one thing looking forward with this, that with that Dallas game, was the fact that Romo just kind of became unhinged in that second half. And I just, after the field goal that he botched last year and then him becoming unhinged this year, now you have a pattern. And I just wonder if people are going to spend the whole season talking about, or the off season talking about this, bringing it up, blah, 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 can he come through? And, that could get dangerous.
If they do, I hope it's just that he's not gutty or something, or doesn't have what it takes down the stretch. I hope it's not this Jessica Simpson nonsense.
Right.
I mean, come on. I mean, Should we also investigate what Patrick Creighton did in the off week and what Peyton Manning did and all these other goats? This guy, he didn't shoot up heroin at the park and ride the night before the game, like
right.
Barrett Robbins or Eugene Robbins. Like they're making Eugene Robinson. This is a nothing story compared to Tony Romo sunbathing and relaxing with his hot girlfriend. It's
right.
Crazy after a while.
Don't you think that it's just because people don't like Jessica Simpson?
Yeah, that probably helps.
I feel like that's 90% of this. Like, if this was...
If it was Kelly Ripa and she was single, everyone would be fine with it.
Yeah, even Carrie Underwood, I don't think people would care. Like, it seems like she's one of the two or three people that you could get involved with that people are just going to start searching for stuff.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But it is kind of, you have to admit, it is a little uncanny how she showed up and the season kind of went south right around the same time. That is a little weird.
All right, I'll give you uncanny, but that's it. That's got to be it.
I mean, uncanny coincidence.
He's a good player. If anything, you think he'd want to shut everyone up about this. I mean, he's not an idiot. He doesn't want to hear about this all year.
Well, look, I think there's only one way to settle this is next year you date Jessica Simpson, and then you book plane tickets with her for whatever the big game is and see if, like, it's a double jinx and it will unravel. The other killer thing for you with that Sunday game was the fact that it was the Giants, who you just hate.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
Well,
I was at peace with the fact that, all right, if we lose to the Packers, Favre is a nice story. You know, Patriots are better than us if we lost in the Super Bowl, but I just can't lose to these Giants and after beating them twice in the regular season soundly. And here we go. We did it.
Well, and on top of that, and I didn't go. And one of the reasons I didn't go was because I was rooting for the Giants, and it meant more to you than anybody else who was at the house. But
well, thank you for that.
There were a lot of Giants fans at Jimmy's house on Sunday that you watched the game with, and from what I heard, you were the only Cowboys fan.
By the way, they were crawling out of the wood. You wouldn't believe some of the people who were Giant fans all of a sudden. People
like
who were
who?
There all year and don't make a peep of all of a sudden become Giant fans. And I watched outside. I found, you know, Jimmy has 47 TVs around the house, so I watched outside alone the entire game, and it was a killer for me because there's like a 2 or 3 second delay.
Right.
In my favor. So I'd see a terrible play against Cowboys first, and then I'd have to relive it again when I hear everyone cheer in the kitchen. So it was brutal. What a brutal day.
And you didn't have one other Dallas fan there?
There was one other, but I really just wanted to watch it alone. I just wanted to watch it alone. So I got crazy. I shouldn't have gone either.
No, you probably shouldn't have gone. Well, now you know how I felt that time in 2003 when I was working for Jimmy's show and you guys secretly taped me during the Boone's home run game.
Oh, we did do that, right?
Yeah, that was terrible. I don't know how responsible you were for that, but that was really horrible. And if that tape ever shows up on YouTube, I'm declaring war on Kimmel and the entire Kimmel show.
Well, you were picking your nose. That's all we wanted to get. We didn't care about anything else.
I picked my nose. Right. You always pick your nose.
My hands are down my pants. How can I pick my nose? Come on.
Do you want to call, should we call the mysterious Brad?
Not really. I don't want to hear from him, but I guess we have to. He's another big Giant fan.
All right, so we're going to call our crazy friend Brad, a Giants fan. He's come on the past couple weeks, a friend of Sal's and a friend of mine, and we're going to get his thoughts on the big Giants-Cowboys game. How you feeling? How was that Giants game for you? Do you feel bad that it ruined Sal's 2008?
I do. I would trade it for us for that man to be happy. He's a good guy.
Oh, stop it! So you root for who you root for. That's God bless you. Go on and play the pass.
This is our initial speaking. As soon as when it was 3rd and 11, I had all my stuff at the door, and as soon as it was no more, I ran out the front.
Brad, I got word afterwards that Brad's like, I'm out of here. He didn't want to be around for the carnage, and he left immediately after the interception.
Interesting.
The interesting part was we were all watching. You know, Jimmy has quite a few TVs, and all of them quite larger than most people's. And you know, Jimmy's closest person to him is the guy who's standing outside watching on the 10-inch screen.
Yeah, we're sliding around the kitchen at every play. I didn't want to hear you. I didn't want to get injured myself trying to walk through to grab a slice of pizza.
It turned out to be pretty key, though.
Yeah. It really sounds like there should have been cameras there.
It was the opposite of a zoo because we were all inside, and then we were watching the caged animal who was outside. Right. Because we could see Sal through the door, and he was pacing around, and his hand on his head, and his he had 1 second of his feed was 1 second quicker.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I could see when things were going to go bad. I knew the pass was going to be incomplete or whatever. And yeah, it was crazy.
Hey Brad, were you more excited that the Giants won or that Juno didn't win a Golden Globe that night?
I was more excited for the Giants, but thank God, right? That nonsense. I mean, enough's enough. It seems to be dying down, right? I mean,
your Juno mania? Yeah, I think it's dying down.
Well, here's the thing: it's not funny.
No.
So it has to die down at some point. It's just one of those movies where, you know, you like it because that cute girl in your office who's kind of cute, but maybe she doesn't take showers every day, but she's still kind of cute. And she really liked it, so you feel like you have to really like it if you're ever going to have a chance.
Right.
You know, and then you end up getting with her, and the next morning the room smells like two guys were wrestling all night. You're like, what the hell? I went and saw that movie for no reason.
I'm glad we took a
respite from talking about the Giants for a few minutes.
Yeah, that was good. What was your favorite movie of 2007, just out of curiosity?
No Country for Old Men.
Really?
No doubt.
Do you like the ambiguous English major type of movie making?
Well, I just thought that bad guy was the best bad guy I've seen in a very long time.
He really is. He ranks up there with Darth Vader and I don't know who else, but yeah,
And to think that he's also the lead singer of the Crash Test Dummies, I think it's amazing. yeah, well, Brad, what was the worst movie you saw in 2007?
In the theaters, I probably only went to 10 or 15 movies.
You like Zodiac. We watched that.
Zodiac was ridiculous, too.
You didn't like the three-hour Zodiac? Yeah.
That's great. Jake Gyllenhaal is the worst actor in America. I challenge anybody to tell me anybody's in it. He's got one face. Whether if you just figured out who the Zodiac is, or if you it's the same face.
Well, that's going to get cut out. See, I would argue that Josh Hartnett is worse.
Yeah, it's the same dude, I think.
I've never seen Josh Hartnett in anything be good. At least Jake Gyllenhaal was one of the two people that was in a well-received movie. Josh Hartnett has done nothing for 10 years.
I know. No, Jake Gyllenhaal is terrible. That movie, I don't understand why that movie's so... it's sneaking on all these lists, and I just...
Zodiac, I mean, talk about.
Yeah, and I don't get it. It's like, you know, if you don't know the ending beforehand, then you're pretty much, you know, telling people you haven't read a paper in 30 years. So I'm no longer going to listen to your opinion either.
Yeah.
By the way, I just went on TMZ. Tony Romo was spotted with Jake Gyllenhaal in the Bahamas.
Oh, my God.
I hope this is a big thing.
That should have happened.
He has the same face, right?
Yeah.
Brad, how do you feel heading into this Packers game? Eli, a good warm weather quarterback, not as good in the cold weather, and admit so. And
he's now good he's on the road.
Going to Wisconsin.
I mean, they played the perfect game, right? No turnovers, two penalties the whole game. They caught huge breaks when Dallas got that same first down twice. I mean, they got the first down, they completed the pass, and then there was the crazy penalty on against Strahan.
Yeah.
Where they hit him kind of after. I mean, the guy's still trying to get your quarterback. You're back to the quarterback. He hits him. That was ridiculous. And then on the next play, they got the first down again when Creighton dropped the ball.
That Leonard Davis play is a completely legal play. I haven't heard anyone official-wise talk about it. But
the play that I'm talking about?
You could go to the whistle. Sure, of course. Trahan gets up. He could still sack Romo.
Yeah, right. The Creighton drop was, in my opinion, the biggest play of the game.
He was terrible. Like, and I don't know what you do. Do you blame a coach on that or what? But there were like six drops, and it's just bad news. Even Fasano dropped one at the goal line, and I don't know about Wade Phillips. Like, maybe he's good, maybe he's bad. Just get me a coach that can win two games in December and one in January. That's all I want.
Well, you know what bothered me after the game was Wade Phillips doing the whole thing about, I know we have a better team, we just didn't play as well. Hey, we played the game to determine who had a better team, and you lost. You can't say after the fact that you had a better team.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree on that or no?
I agree. And the other thing, I don't understand the difference. It's third and 20, and he calls that timeout. I think there's not much difference between third and 20 and third and 25. There's a big difference to having that other timeout.
That is true.
It would have been nice to have a 15-yard pass to Witten over the middle as an option towards the end to bring us closer. But
what, Sal, were you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how disturbed were you by the clock management last 5 minutes?
Well, I think it surprised me as much as everyone else. It's like, I remember looking down like, holy God, it's 4:40 left. This is really it. And the Giants then helped them by going three and out, one of their two three and outs in the fourth quarter. But, yeah, and then but it did seem like a tremendous mess. And but one thing I'll give the Giants, I'll give them, that pass rush was phenomenal. They had a rush up the middle that required Romo to sprint to the sidelines and then make some poor decisions.
And they didn't get tired either. I thought for sure they'd get tired in the second half.
They turned it on, that pass rush. It was amazing.
Yeah. I will say one thing, though. Hey, let's talk about the timeouts for a second, just logically. The Giants have the ball. They run the three plays. The Cowboys don't call a timeout on any of the three plays. The maximum amount of time elapses on each of the plays. What is the point of not calling the timeout? Like, you can't do better with a timeout than saving 45 seconds, right?
No, I know. I got to say, though, a minute 50 at midfield, I thought we were okay. I really did think we were okay. I don't know where the time went after that. And, like, Witten on that forward progress call, that was unfortunate. I mean, that was the right call, but we had to waste one there. And,
yeah, the Fegels punt wasn't very good. And it's funny because in the earlier game, the Chargers got like one of the most clutch punts I think I ever remember seeing in that Colts game where they, what did he kick it from like his own five and he put the Colts at like their 30 or their 25. That was insane.
Special teams figured in. And what about the Colt that tried to down it at the one and carried it into the end zone? Like that,
right.
That ended up being a big play too. So.
Yeah, the Colts played with the urgency of a team whose coach was looking at schools in Tampa Bay the week leading up to the game.
Yeah.
That was terrible. But the one weird thing about the Giants-Cowboys game, which also was the same with the Jags-Pats, that neither game really had a flow. Like the Jags-Pats game went so fast because everybody completed every pass. The game was like after an hour, it was halftime.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what the deal was with the Giants-Dallas game, but all of a sudden, as you said, there was 5 minutes left. What happened to this game?
10-minute drive, and then they answer in 43 seconds. It's demoralizing. And then very similar second half. Just,
that's exactly what happened.
It was a weird game.
Yeah. Well, I do think if the Giants keep it up, if Burris puts up another whopping 5 yards receiving against the Packers and you know, Ryan Grant beats up the linebackers like Marion Barber did, they're going to be in good shape against the Packers.
Yeah, you know what? I hope we get Jason Garrett as the head coach because he's really proven himself in this league. He's been around a long time. He was a great player. I mean, who doesn't remember his big
play? No, you're a Coughlin fan, right? You and everyone else love Coughlin. He's got to stay.
Yeah.
I mean, he had all those big playoff wins. He's been the head. I mean, he's putting his time as an assistant coach, and he's been the coordinator for decades now. And, you know, I mean, it's just his time. I mean, enough's enough. Let's get Jason Garrett a head coaching job.
Yeah, you did a good job sticking by Coughlin. That was good. That was good of you. You were the only one.
Brad, do you go to...
there can't be anybody more qualified than Jason Garrett.
Brad, do you go to the Super Bowl if the Giants make it?
Do I go to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
That's cute. When I go to Jimmy's on Sundays, I don't even buy the donuts.
He's saying he doesn't have enough money.
Yeah. Well, that $5.95 comes from my buddy Greg.
Bill,
I even go in there. I order the donuts. I go, give me a dozen donuts. Guy starts putting the donuts in on his own. I got to tell him every week, listen, I don't want your donuts. Let me pick my donuts. And we go through this whole thing where he takes them all out. Then I pick the glazed ones. He puts them in. He wants $5.95. I wait 15 minutes for Greg to show up. And then he pays
for the donuts.
Yeah. So I'm not going to the Super Bowl.
Brad, I got two emails. I want you to stay on the line for these. This one's from Darius in Oakland. Wondered if I could pass along a message to Cousin Sal. Here it goes. You messed up by buying those tickets that you mentioned on the podcast. The football gods punished us. You even said that you shouldn't have done it and rehashed what happened the last time. This was just as bad as Bill and his dad watching Deja Vu the night of the 2007 NBA draft lottery. You messed this up. You did this. End of rant. Brad, do you think that guy's off base?
Yeah, it's a real bright guy.
All right.
It's obviously Sal's fault. I questioned it too at first, but the point he made, which was solid, was if he went this week and they lost, that would stink too. You know, yeah. You'd rather pay. I mean, if I'm in his position, I would almost rather pay the $300, you know, whatever the plane ticket is.
The problem is, I'm not a gazillionaire like Simmons, and I don't have ESPN. I can't snap my fingers and have them put me on the first class flight out. I have to reserve.
How dare you?
Well, the truth came out.
Taking shots at me.
Yeah, how does that work?
Brad, give us your prediction for Packers Giants.
What's the number anyway? Is it 8 or 9?
What was that noise?
What?
Did you just make that noise with your mouth?
Well, yeah. What else do you have by the mouth part of your phone?
I don't know. Right? It was a weird vibrating noise. I was concerned.
He's trying to be diplomatic. He doesn't think his Giants are going to win for the third week in a row. But he's got.
I know. I didn't think they're going to win last week, and now I'm a little more confident. If they go to the Patriots, beat them up, you're going to be unbearable. Thanks again for not showing up this weekend.
What did I do?
No, thanks again for not coming. Jimmy.
Why am I unbearable? What have I done about the Pats?
Why are you unbearable? Oh, goodness gracious. Really? Really? Really?
Uh-oh.
Really? Where are you right now?
What do
at
you mean,
home,
where?
Right?
Yeah, I'm at home.
After this, you're going to take a bath in $100 bills. Your teams are 16-0. Your Celtics haven't lost in 2 months. Your Red Sox have... How are you unbearable?
The Celtics are struggling.
You're the least likable person on the planet.
Wow.
Holy God.
Where's the Damashek?
What, are you kidding me?
The Celtics have lost 3 of 4.
You're the worst.
Doc Rivers' All-Star game is in jeopardy. His All-Star coaching bid, I was bummed out because I wanted Doc in the All-Star game because I wanted to see how he was going to juggle 12 guys. I thought that was going to be a fascinating experiment.
Oh,
but
no.
Now he's in trouble.
You're the worst.
You know, when Gerard was rolling and threw that 4th-and-1 pass for 30 yards and was down on his knee or his ankle or whatever, and I was like, oh, this would be great if Simmons just wrote about this for 3 months. If the Patriots lost, so can it just be? And not even close.
That hurts.
The Giants aren't going to be the team to beat them either, so that's why I don't.
Now
I would definitely trade a Giant going to the Super Bowl so he could guarantee me that the Packers would beat the Patriots. That's how much I want to see you sad.
That hurts.
Well, listen,
I gave you a national forum to bash Juno, and that's how you.
You've given me nothing. Nothing. You've never given me a damn thing. I'm rooting against you as hard as I can.
Well, thank you. And on that note, we're letting you go.
Take good care.
Good luck. Good luck with your job.
All right.
Talk to you later. All right.
See, he turned it up at the end.
He did turn it. Well, I think we caught it. Was he asleep?
I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. Yeah, you woke him up with Juno, and it was all downhill from there.
All right, let's do the lines. And I actually don't know what the lines are, so I'm going to do my guess. You know what the lines are. Somehow
I wrote down your guess because you did text me your guess. And I thought this Giants Green Bay, I thought it would be 8. You thought it would be 6, and it's 7 right now. So we both get it.
Wow, we split that one.
Yeah, we split it.
7, huh? What do you think of that?
I'll tell you what. I was angry and everything, and I thought it was sour grapes. I was like, oh, they're just going to get killed, the Giants. But the truth is, I think they're going to do just enough to hang around and make that a close game. I hate it. And, you know, no one's going to take the Packers lightly now. They scored 42 points. So what do you think?
I haven't formed my opinions yet. I think you could make cases for both sides. Giants are hot, but they're officially a hot team. Although even if they had the 57 yards of offense the second half, I still think that they've got something going. And the Pack look great. So,
it's going to be a cold one, boy. That's a 5:30 Central Time start. It's going to be cold Sunday.
What an event, though, that game was. The snow in the HD was just marvelous.
That was nice. I told my wife, who grew up in Milwaukee, I was like, look at that. I saved your life. I saved your life moving you out to California. When people go crazy about the snow, they forget that 30 degrees, 20 degrees comes with it.
Right. Right. On TV, the snow looks great.
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. All right, what was the other one?
San Diego, New England, I said 15, you said 13.5. It opened at 14.5, and now I think it's 14. So.
Oh, so you beat me.
I did. We split one, and I got the second one, yeah.
So it's at 14 right now.
It's at 14 right now, yep.
Two touchdowns.
Billy Volek is going to Disney World, pal. I don't know how to break it to you other than just tell you straight out.
How much money would you have bet if I had told you that in the fourth quarter of that game, it would be Billy Volek and Darren Sproles? I mean, seriously. That has to be one of the top five most improbable, not only gambling covers, but wins that I can remember. Just,
I know, and they drove down the field, which makes it actually hurts extra that Tony Romo couldn't get the job done. I know. Oh, sickening.
And also, if Harrison doesn't fumble when they're up 7-0, they're driving for the second score, is there any doubt that that game's 42-10 final?
No, I agree with you. The Colts were doing kind of what the Cowboys were doing, but with passing. Like, they were getting, like, you know, 12-yard pass, 13-yard passes anytime they wanted it, where the Cowboys, Marion Barber, was sending linebackers to the hospital 7-8 yards a clip. They're right. Like, all right, they could score at any time, and they just no points at the end of the game.
Yeah. You know, the one play they ran that I don't think ever works is that the delayed screen over the middle to the halfback when you're, like, inside the five-yard line.
Yes, right.
That
right.
is the most dangerous play in football other than the play where you throw the backwards pass to the guy who then has to throw it, which
yep.
always gets screwed up. But I've never seen that delayed halfback goal line pass work.
You're right, yeah.
And it always gets tipped or it bounces off the guy's hands. The quarterback always rushes it. Like, I don't know how that's the best play you run from the 3-yard line.
Yeah,
especially to Kenton Keith. It's not like it was to a die, you know?
Right.
They talk about giving away a game. Wow.
I'm burnt out over sports. I'm just completely burnt out. I really am. I hope I get rejuvenated at some point, Pro Bowl or something. But
well, the good news is you have a second kid coming. You're not going to sleep for about 3 months. So look forward to that. Cousin Sal, we're glad you're in good shape.
All right, buddy. We're
going to talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, good.
I think we're taking next week off.
Yeah, we can take next week off.
Yeah, why don't you take next week off?
Travel with Jessica Simpson. Let her say some stupid things. Maybe it'll make us laugh.
We'll come back in 2 weeks for the Super Bowl line.
I'll see you, pal.
All right, take care. All right, Sal was so down in the dumps that I think we need a boost from our old friend, the gregarious raconteur, Mr. Jacko. We've postponed the Johnny Are You Worried Yet segments until we get closer to baseball season. But there is some stuff going on, including Johan Santana, Roger Clemens. The political races are heating up, so I want to call him and get his thoughts. Let's see if he's at work.
Hello, John O'Connell.
Johnny!
Hey!
We haven't talked to you on the podcast in 2008 yet. I had to call.
Excellent. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. A lot going on.
There really is. You got the football.
What is the word on the Johan Santana sweepstakes and Hank Steinbrenner's recent comments?
Well, the word from my end is abject frustration. That's actually two words.
Yes, but, that's two words.
That's the two words from my end. I really cannot read any more of the Twins insider, Lavelle Neal III. I can't read any more of Hank's pronouncements where one day there's claims and sources and reports that say they're out of it, and then the next day they're right back in it. I just don't know anymore what's going on.
You know who's a hell of a writer, though? You know who's a hell of a writer? Lavelle Neal Jr.
I remember going to read him, the Twins Insider, about Warren Spahn back in the 60s. It's good stuff.
I love what we're both thirds. We don't use the third. Why do people insist on using the third? Unless your dad is legitimately famous,
right?
There's no reason to use the third as a professional name. There's no reason.
Well, I don't know. Maybe as a newspaper man, his name's in print newspaper, and he's like giving props to his dad. It's like a way his dad can make it, you know. I don't know. I don't know why he's Lavelle Neal III either.
Should I do William J. Simmons III?
I think you should.
I'm gonna do that. Maybe for ESPN the magazine, I'll switch.
If I knew you were calling me for a podcast, I would have answered John B. O'Connell III. But you know, that would be really impressive. I'd get up to that 100 email fans before long.
Where do you see the Santana thing headed, if anywhere?
I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what the Twins are doing at this point. I mean, every day it's something different about, like, well, I mean, it's like this friend of ours, you know, I want to trade him, but I can't.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the story is. It's ridiculous. I mean, I can't believe they've hung on to him this long. They should have struck while the iron was hot at the winter meetings, and now they've dragged it out to the point where nobody even really cares anymore because it's just so pathetic.
Well, you know that...
And the New York Post claimed today that they're still asking for Hughes, Kennedy, Cabrera, and a minor leaguer, Jeff Marquez.
Right.
So it's like, at this point, if you're still asking for both those pitchers when the Yankees haven't bitten yet, I don't know why you think they would do that, you know? That was the thing. That was today's report that the Yankees claim we're still in it if the Twins lower their price. So, I mean, you know, they're not really like, they're not really trying to move him while everybody's clamoring for him at this point. Everybody's just kind of bored with it, you know?
Well, you know, Bud Selig doesn't have the same juice of somebody like David Stern, because if this was Stern, he would have ordered the Santana trade to deflect all the attention going to the Mitchell report and his own inadequacies and all that stuff. There would have been like five trades by now.
Definitely.
And probably something else major, like some expansion team announced or.
Yeah.
They would have done 10 different things, but Bud Selig really hasn't done anything.
Do you think that he was hoping that the Scott Rolen for Troy Glass trade would really grab America by the lapels and demand their attention?
Was that a trade?
Yeah, that really was a trade.
When was that? Somehow I missed that.
That was finalized yesterday. Yeah, pretty much all of North America missed that one. Yeah, I did
see
the newspaper. Scott Rolen is a Blue Jay, and Troy Glass and some cash went to the Cardinals.
I'm kind of scared. I don't like having Scott Rolen in the American League East.
I know. It's worrisome. He's a big upgrade over Troy Glass, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's definite. So we haven't talked to you since 60 Minutes.
Mm.
The Roger Clemens interview with 409-year-old Bob
Mike Wallace.
And then the subsequent press conference.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how convincing do you think Clemens was?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
About a negative 3.
Negative 3, interesting.
Yeah, I thought he was abysmal on 60 Minutes. I mean, he kept trying to bring it around to the Vioxx thing, which was just like the biggest smokescreen of all time.
Yeah.
When Mike Wallace was like, well, are you going to testify before Congress? And he's like, yeah, and I'm going to talk about Vioxx and the dangers that it presented to my body. Come on, Roger. Congress doesn't care about Vioxx. Nobody wants to talk about Vioxx. And when Mike Wallace is like, would you take a lie detector test? And he's like, well, would that prove anything? I don't even know. You know? I mean, come on.
I had two problems. The first was that when he said how he didn't want to sue the guy because that would just cost him money, and why should he spend money?
Right.
You should spend the money because you've made $400 million.
Exactly.
And your reputation is at stake.
Lawyer's fees are chump change for Roger, right?
Second, it was never explained to me how he was adamantly against the short-term fix of steroids that would lead to long-term damage, and yet he tells this story about being in Joe Torre's office when, he had this ball in his elbow and he had a torn hamstring, and he's just like, I got to go, and they shot me up, and I went out there. Like, how is that not risking your long-term career?
Exactly, right.
And then he tells how he's eating Vioxx, like they're candy, and so he's doing all these different things to try to get an edge, and yet he's not going to take steroids.
And if you're that concerned about your body and your health and your well-being, and yet you have some trainer who has, like, no medical training whatsoever, and you're like, yeah, shoot me up with that lidocaine, that B12, you know?
Right.
Like, why would you possibly do that? The guy's not like a doctor or a nurse, you know?
Right.
This just doesn't. His story just doesn't hold any water whatsoever. And I mean, you know, Mike Wallace was like, when Mike Wallace is like, swear, and Clemens is like, I swear. I mean, that's some hard-hitting journalism right there. I was waiting for Mike to say, cross your heart, hope to die, stick a needle in your eye. I do, Mike. I do. I pinky swear.
I love the whole concept of the B12 shot.
Like, yeah.
Just like imagine we're in college and I have no energy today. Johnny, will you give me a B12 shot?
Yeah.
I'm going to pull down my pants and you jam this syringe into my butt.
Yeah, it's nonsensical.
Yeah.
It's completely nonsensical. I was hoping that 800-year-old Mike Wallace would talk about interviewing Christy Mathewson before the big 1908 series against the Cubs. Christy Mathewson telling Mike Wallace, I want to keep drugs out of the sport. But the drug he was talking about was penicillin, which was just invented.
Well, yeah.
That whole 60 Minutes was fascinating to me because the story prior to Roger, I hadn't watched 60 Minutes in about 40 years, I don't think. And they had a story about a hitman for the mob in Boston, and he killed 20 people over the course of 20 years.
Yeah.
And the reporter said, are you worried about going to hell? And he said, no, because I went to confession, and the priest told me to do ten Our Fathers and 10 Hail Marys, and then I was relieved of my sins.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Wow, the Catholic Church can kind of ease it up on things, huh? 20 prayers for 20 murders? I almost went back to church after that.
Well, and then he basically admitted at the end that if he sees Whitey Bulger, he's killing him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's true. The priest told him not to kill anybody else. Then the reporter's like, would you kill Whitey Bulger? And the guy's like, kind of a too long pause. Yeah. So between that story and then Roger Clemens and then Andy Rooney, who literally is like 147 years old, I mean, yeah, that whole show was just mesmerizing to me.
Well, you left out the dictator. They had a dictator. They had a dictator followed by a mafia hitman followed by Roger Clemens.
It's a good group.
Three of the greats. I came away from that interview thinking the same thing that I thought at the end of his campaign or the end of his career in Boston, which is that he's just not smart.
Well, that's exactly what I told everybody the next day when we were talking about it at work. And I said, fundamentally, Roger's biggest problem is that he's just not that bright. He's really not bright enough to pull off this defense of just lying to everybody.
Right.
If you were smarter, you could get away with it. But he's just not smart enough to lie, just blatantly lie to everybody. He can't pull it off. He's going to get caught.
Like, he's the same guy who, in that press conference after he signed with Toronto, you know, spent 45 minutes talking about how excited he was to be a Blue Jay, like said like two sentences about Red Sox fans. Like he just wasn't smart enough to understand like that one press conference could damage his legacy for a lot of people.
And his anger about why can't I get the benefit of the doubt, people could point to the fact that he claimed he would never leave Boston unless it was to go play at home in Texas, and then he went to Toronto. He has a history of retiring and then coming back to the highest bidder. So, you know, his credibility is not really starting from a high point to begin with, you know.
Well, that was another interesting thing about the interview, which is really one of Clemens' enduring legacies, is how cheap he is and how driven by money he is. Like, you know, the fact that he wouldn't sue this guy for how much would it cost to do a libel suit against somebody?
I mean, on the outside, you're talking about like $1 million maybe.
Right, and he's made...
And he made $28 million from holding up the Yankees this year, you know?
Right. But when you look at that, and you just look at the way his career has unfolded, and he's always gone for the best offer. Like, back in the mid-90s, when Will McDonough was alive in the Boston, and he wrote for the Boston Globe, he used to call Roger the Texas con man, and used to say how he was always about the money. And like, Will McDonough would just be in heaven right now if he was alive with this whole Clemens thing.
But, he'd be in heaven if he was alive.
that's one of the dumbest things I've ever said. Will McDonough would be delighted if he was alive. Yeah, that's
what he is in heaven now, we like to think. So,
yes.
And the other thing that Clemens said that was completely nonsensical is when he kept talking about he doesn't care about the Hall of Fame, and he never played the game for history. This is the same guy when he gets 20 strikeouts is picking up handfuls of dirt to record it by to save it from. And now we're supposed to believe he doesn't care about the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Frank, you know, when he won 300 games, it was like celebrated for 3 months with like, you know, marketing opportunities and everything else, special baseballs. Now he doesn't care about the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, just once in his career, it would have been a good idea for him to do something that wasn't for the highest bidder.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever did that. Like, if he had signed with the Red Sox last year for 75% of what everyone else offered,
right?
At least it would have been this gesture that convinced people that, hey, maybe this guy's not totally about the money.
Right, exactly.
But
And then that press conference when they had this allegedly like smoking gun tape that was going to blow the lid off the whole thing, it was like the biggest disappointment ever. I mean, it was 15 minutes of that guy McNamee who sounds pathetic. He sounds like somebody who testified against his friend. Mm. But 47 times when he's like, what do you want me to do? If you were completely innocent, you're Clemens, wouldn't you be screaming at him, tell the expletive truth?
Right.
Like, isn't that what you would do? Like, if I exposed you in some pseudo-plagiarism scandal or something.
Yeah.
I called you up, and I'm like, Bill, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Wouldn't you be screaming at me, like, tell the truth, you blankety-blank, you know?
Yes.
Like, to stop lying about my record, that type of thing? Like, wouldn't you be doing that, like, the first thing? And meanwhile, Clemens is like, I don't know. I'm just numb. I don't know. My kids. Debbie's still upset. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ironic that his nickname is the Rocket, and he's not a rocket scientist.
No, it's really not.
We should call him the Rocket Scientist, Roger Clemens.
McNamee sounded like just pathetic and like suicidal, and you know, you think Clemens would be like, "Yeah, I want you to tell the truth. I can't believe you made this up about me." There was none of that, you know.
I also find it hard to believe that you could spend that much time with somebody and then not know that they're dealing copious amounts of steroids.
Well, that was the other thing in 60 Minutes when they're like, what did you think about Andy Pettit, you know? And he's like, oh, I had no idea. Oh, geez, I was shocked about it when I read about it. It's like they're like best friends. They work out together. He completely controlled, like, Pettit's workouts, and he's like, no clue, Mike, not an idea, you know? It's completely unbelievable on its face.
Yeah, it's it's certainly a story that had a lot of comedy in it, and also it's kind of depressing. Like, it's just, I always thought if Roger Clemens went down like the way he's going down now, I'd be like really happy about it because of the way he screwed over Boston and everything. But actually, it's
sure,
not that enjoyable. I don't really like really anything about this story other than the fact that the 60 minutes interview, I just thought was a great 15 minutes to spend. It really was just, it actually reminded me of, remember the old SNL sketch with Nathan Thurm, when Martin Short was the chain-smoking lawyer.
Exactly.
I didn't say that. Wait, you're the one who say that. I mean, it's him. It's not me. I mean, it was like,
Clemens just needed the cigarette with like the foot-long ash hanging from it. Sweat pouring down.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, Harry Shearer's Mike Wallace was much more probing and incisive than the real Mike Wallace. So that skit was a little more true to life than life. So
I can't believe Mike Wallace is 89 and still doing this show.
I know. Mike Wallace wasn't allowed to drive to the interview. I know that because Chris Wallace took his car keys away.
I don't even think I know anybody who's 89. Seriously, do you know one person who's 89 years old?
There really ought to be like a mandatory retirement age for TV, don't you think? Like, don't you think Mike doesn't really have the fastball anymore?
I would hope. What does he have at age 89? I mean, seriously, if you're successfully changing channels on your TV, that's an accomplishment at age 89. If you're operating the remote, that's the highlight.
It would have been so funny if they went to like a cutaway shot and he was staring in the opposite direction from the camera. The producer's like, Mike, over here. Here's the camera.
Or they panned back and he was wearing one of those nursing home gowns. Hey, I got to get your thoughts on the political races, because I had a reader compare what happened with Clinton in New Hampshire to the Red Sox storming back in the 2004 ALCS, which I thought was a little strong.
Wow. That is a strong statement.
In terms of improbable comeback.
It's true. I mean,
inference.
Everybody claimed that Obama was going to win by like anywhere from 10 to 20 points. And she was dead in the water. It was going to be the end of the Clinton hold on the Democratic Party. And I mean, nobody expected her to win.
Right.
I was the only person, and I have emails too that will prove this, that I thought the crying thing was going to help her.
Yeah.
People were like, pundits were like, oh, it's not going to make any difference. It probably hurts her. And I knew that was going to help because it kind of tugged at the old heartstrings for Democrats that had, you know, longings for the Clinton administration part two. And they were like, oh, God, look what we've done to her. You know, we forgot how much we loved her. I knew that was going to help, but I'm like shocked that it propelled her to victory. It's really shocking.
Do you think Clemens should have tried that?
Clemens should have cried, yeah. Well, Clemens should have come out and just admitted it. He's like, look, I was getting old. I was trying to hang on. It was a stupid mistake. I'm sorry. Just apologize. America eats that up. Apologize and cry. He'd be in the Hall of Fame tomorrow.
Yeah, that's probably, you're probably right.
If Pete Rose apologized in 1990 and was like, oh, I got caught up in gambling. I'm a gambling addict. I never bet against the Reds. Nobody would care. He'd be in the Hall of Fame today, too.
Yeah,
it's denying and trying to, you know, stonewall that America doesn't like. But the political thing, like, I don't know what's going to happen now. I mean, I just don't know. It's all going to come to Super Tuesday, obviously, on February 5th, but I couldn't tell you who either nominee is going to be, which is really amazing to say at this point.
Yeah, I don't remember another election like that, at least in our lifetime.
No,
just up for grabs.
Especially if Romney wins Michigan on the Republican side today, and then you will have had three winners in the three allegedly big states early on. And then Giuliani could make some noise on Super Tuesday. I mean, it could really be, like, completely wide open. Partly
I have to ask you,
happy with the choice, but
what is the point of this whole process starting in Iowa and then going to New Hampshire? Just like, because you know you follow this stuff a lot more closely than I do. How are those two states the best two indicators of where America's leaning?
Well, that's just it. They're not. They're completely unrepresentative of America as a whole. And for some reason, the parties are completely beholden to continuing to do it to have the first two, well, caucus and primary in those two states. And other states tried to get in early, like Florida and Michigan tried to do, and the parties penalized them for that because for the life of me, I can't really understand why they're so beholden to New Hampshire and Iowa, like what they think it gets them.
Hmm.
Because in terms of like the demographics and where people are, you get very unrepresentative nominees potentially, you know? I mean, I think this thing should be decided like it was in the old days with guys in back rooms with big cigars that picked the best candidate, you know, a bunch of smart guys in a room with a cigar and decide who's the best candidate for the party. So I'm somewhat undemocratic in that sense. But letting people in Iowa, now I'm going to get emails. I got to be careful here. Letting people in Iowa decide anything aside from, like, what kind of popcorn I should eat, it's not something I would normally do, you know? Well, I'm sure they're lovely, wonderful people there in the Midwest in Iowa, but, you know, I don't know if I want them picking my next president.
Well, and then with New Hampshire, New Hampshire is probably my top three favorite states.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is Trey Anastasio from Fish could run as a Democrat, and he'd probably sweep New Hampshire.
Right.
That's a little dangerous. New Hampshire is a very quirky place. The New Hampshire people are cool. They're very laid back. They like their music. They like their other stuff.
But then you also have like an old type, like kind of cranky New Englander, like in his flannel hat, getting maple syrup, who's just like cranky. Like, I'm not sure you want that guy deciding the president either, you know?
Right.
No offense to New Hampshire. Now we'll be flooded with emails from New Hampshire and Iowa.
No, I love New Hampshire. New Hampshire better not flood it. I've never met anybody that isn't like from New Hampshire. I just think it's weird that they're the second state in line.
Really, any state that's a strong part of Red Sox Nation shouldn't be allowed to decide the president anyway, is what I firmly believe. So what chance did Giuliani have there, you know? So
I would think, like, if I did it off the, you know, just doing this off the top of my head, I would think, like, a state like Michigan would seem like that would
that's
be the most
one.
Reasonable place to do it. Like, they have a big city. They have all the suburbs.
Area.
They have poor people. They have rich people. They have middle-class people. It's right in the middle. It seemed like that would be a logical place to start.
Well, what they should really do is they should basically have, like it should be like the final four. Like, there should be four regions, and they should just have, like, four super primaries, or maybe more than four, but divide the country up into, like, huge regions where there's, like, a huge swath of the country that decides. And candidates would have to go to all those states within an area, and, like, you know, you'd have several months to work itself out and then, like, go to the next one, and it'd be much more representative that way. It'd be sort of a mini presidential election that you have to appeal to different states and different interests and people of different demographics. And
Johnny, I like that idea.
Nominee, you know?
I like that idea, because then Gus Johnson could potentially be involved, because it's Final Four.
He could. It could be,
you
like
have the CBS music.
You could have, like, coming out of the East region, McCain, and then, like, out of the West region, McCain, and out of the Northeast region, you know, it'd be like have Romney. It could be like the Final Four.
Yeah. That would be great.
Of course, there also should be a football playoff system, and, you know, there's just so many things that have common sense, a college football playoff system, and
right.
Too many things that make common sense aren't going to happen. So,
yeah, because Iowa and New Hampshire make sense, but only in the context of if there were two other states that kind of reflected a different interest.
Like, if you had, like, a big
Final
state like
idea.
New York or something, or California, and then you had Iowa and New Hampshire in the mix, you had, like, rural and, like, big city, big coast city, you know? So my East Coast bias is showing by throwing Iowa and New Hampshire under the bus, but that's par for the course. I look forward to the emails telling me what I can do with corn on the cob and stuff from Iowa, so that'll be good.
Yeah, I like I like sending those along to you. Those are always fun.
I enjoy it.
All right, well, we're going to let you go, but we might check in with you next week if it's an especially interesting election. You got to make predictions, though.
All right.
No, make them right now.
Oh, right now? Oh, okay. Yeah. Gun to my head, I would say it's going to be McCain against Obama.
Who do you think is going to do the best on Super Tuesday? Never a good idea to use gun to my head with any sort of presidential idea.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the gun to my head to force me to pick. Yeah, I didn't mean that in any other sense.
You don't want John Hinckley III listening to this. Ideas.
If I go, when I leave work, if somebody's outside with the catcher in the rye, I'm going to be very nervous. Who do I think is going to do the best on Super Tuesday?
Yeah.
Well, I think if McCain wins Michigan today, Super Tuesday is not really going to matter on the Republican side. And I think Hillary Clinton is going to do okay on Super Tuesday, but I just think that Obama has a lot of momentum. I think the Democrats really, really want Obama, and that will ultimately happen.
He's
like a movement. He's like a religious movement, the Messiah.
Well, I'm getting sucked in because he plays basketball, he plays poker, and he enjoys The Wire, and he's a closet smoker.
That's right.
So four things
you
I
are
can
Barack
support.
Obama.
Fortunately, I quit smoking, but
I
have no knowledge of any but yeah, and his favorite character in The Wire is Omar, which I think is fantastic. You don't watch The Wire, but
no.
I think it would be interesting to have a president who was an Omar fan.
If he watched Deadwood and they made a Deadwood reference, he might suck me right in too. So.
You know what else is interesting is in high school he used to go by Barry.
Yeah, and then middle name.
And then he decided to do to go back to his full name. But it's just weird that anybody ever called him Barry.
Yeah, it does seem weird.
He seemed like a Barry.
No, he does not.
Barry's like the guy who's your accountant.
Yes.
It's not like your presidential candidate. I don't know.
No. Well,
anyway.
President Barry.
We're going to talk to you next week or the week after, and we'll sort this stuff out.
We'll sort it out. We'll work it out. We'll hug it out.
We'll hug it out. All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Target the sound off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.